Let's take some time and discuss investment theories, strategies, and information sources. So on slide 36, we take a look at the first investment theory, fundamental analysis. And the little bit of work that we did in the previous presentation was essentially the beginnings of fundamental analysis, looking at the numbers, looking at the company. And the basis of fundamental analysis theory is the assumption that a stock's intrinsic or real value is determined by the company's future earnings. Why are businesses in business? To make money. And if the company does well, the stock should do well. Fundamentalists, and it has nothing to do with religion, folks, my apologies, consider the financial strength of the company. They consider the type of the industry that the company is in, new products, new services, the economic growth of the overall economy, the marketplace as a whole, the marketplace for their products. In essence, the stock reflects the company. And I side with the fundamental and analysts. I think these people got their heads screwed on straight. No one said it's easy. In fact, it's pretty darn hard to predict what's going to happen in the future. But it's important, in my humble opinion, and the fundamental analysts, that you need to thoroughly understand the companies that you invest in. But you know what? They're not the only ones out there. Slide 37. There's a whole other group called technical analysts that use technical analysis. And they base their theory on the assumption that a stock's value is determined by the forces of supply and demand in the stock market as a whole, plus the supply and demand of the individual company. They're not looking at expected earnings or any other numbers that we talked about in the previous presentation, but rather on factors found in the market as a whole and the individual stock, as we already said. Many use what are called charts, chartists are called, that plot past price movements and other market averages to observe trends that they then use to predict the few stocks' future value. There are dozens of what are called technical indicators. And you know, folks, I think these people are all wet. I really do. To me, every time it's explained to me, I just kind of nod my head and saying, but that's not a guarantee of what's going to happen in the future. And you can show many instances where it does work and many instances where it doesn't. And of course, there's an entire spectrum. Some people use some fundamental analysis, and then they use some technical analysis. So it's not an either or proposition for many people. In my case, it is. I listen to the technical analysts and I just say that's very nice, but I don't trust a single word you say. And then there are others who don't trust the fundamental analysts. So you see the tug of war. Now, slide 38, there's an entirely third, there's another theory out there that says both of them are goofballs, that neither fundamental analysis nor technical analysis work. And that's called the efficient market theorist, sometimes called the random walk theorists and theories. They submit to you that stock price movements are purely random. And they have good research that shows this to be true in the short term, in the 3, 6, 9 months or year ahead. Yes, they're absolutely right. They have been shown to be right in the short term. But in the long term, they have been shown to be wrong. They believe it is impossible for someone to outperform the market over the long term. But their theory falls apart because there are many long-term investors who do beat the market. So how do they react to this? How do they? Well, it doesn't fit their theory. Obviously, there's a lot of people who do beat the markets over the long term. They say, well, no, those people are just lucky. Yeah, they're just lucky, because if you take 10,000 people and they all make decisions randomly, one of them's going to do really well, maybe two of them, depending on how many random tosses of a coin or how many random choices of a stock there are. And, you know, they're right for the short term, but not for the long term. And I know it's not a perfect analogy, but I tend to use sports, because when you get into the big leagues in sports, you better be pretty darn good, right? You better know what you're doing. And even if you do know what you're doing, it doesn't mean you're going to be the best at what you do. Some people are just, you know, genetically blessed. There's a very famous story about a famous golfer, and if you go look for it online, you'll see that it's attributed to many different individuals, so you can't really know who said it. But it's a great saying. This individual golfer beat all the other golfers and did really, really well out there, and he was being interviewed by a reporter. He said, you know, you are really lucky out there today. And the golfer said, yeah, you're absolutely right. And the funny thing is, the more I practice, the luckier I get. Indeed. Yeah, it's not easy to hit a little ball 400 yards down the fairway and get it in a little bitty hole in three tries. Go ahead, try it. See if they make it look easy, don't they? Or throwing a fastball at 98 miles an hour. Or hitting a fastball at 98 miles an hour. Only a few people can do it. And the ones that can are rewarded very handsomely, both with money and with attention. And the same thing is true in the investment world. There are many people who can do this well. There's a whole lot more who can't. And the people who do it well will tell you, you know, the more I practice, the luckier I get. So the efficient market theorists fall apart, in my humble opinion. They fall apart in this area. Slide 39. What are some stock buying strategies? Well, one of the most fundamental strategies is called buy and hold. You use fundamental analysis to identify high-quality companies at what you believe are reasonable prices, and then you hold them for the long term, 5, 10, 20 years. Warren Buffett is a very famous buy-and-hold investor. He's the sage of Omaha and has amassed a considerable fortune. I think he's now the second largest. Every year it changes, but he's second richest person. It changes every year. Sometimes he's the richest, sometimes he's not. But he's one of the richest people in the world, and he still lives in the same house he bought in 1958 in Omaha, Nebraska. Yeah. They spend over $500,000 just protecting it every year. But anyway, once Mr. Buffett was asked, well, Mr. Buffett, you're a buy-and-hold investor. How long do you hold it? And he said, hold it forever. Now, he was being a little facetious because you don't live forever, but really, if you owned a business and it was a family business, you would hold on to it for the long term. Now, you may bequeath it to your heirs, or when you're ready to retire, maybe one of your managers might buy it from you or something, whatever the case. But you hold the business because it's a good business. The buy and hold strategy works well with dollar cost averaging. Remember dollar cost averaging from chapter 11? We'll come back to it again. And dividend reinvestment plans. DRIPs. Isn't that a great name, DRIP? Dividend reinvestment plans are a great way to buy a stock that pays dividends and reinvest those dividends back into the companies. So for example, Johnson & Johnson and General Electric and Coca-Cola, McDonald's, companies that have been around forever, pay decent dividends, you can turn around and buy more shares of the dividends. Now, we're going to get to mutual funds in the next chapter, and this is the absolute best way to invest in mutual funds. And in fact, they don't even ask you if you want dividend reinvestment plans. They just do it automatically, unless you tell them not to. In the stock world, you have to tell your broker, yes, Mr. Broker, yes, Ms. Broker, I want to reinvest my dividends. Because normally they'll just give them to you in cash. They'll go into your account as cash. So I'm a buy and hold kind of guy, folks. But there are other investment strategies. There are other stock buying strategies. And the first three on slide 40 I call dumb, dumber, and dumbest. The first one is momentum trading. These people use what is called the greater fool theory. Buy high, sell higher. Somewhere out there is a greater fool than I who will buy the shares that I bought at a high price at a higher price. Does this sound familiar? This is what happened during the run-up in 2004 to 2007 in the, in the housing market. Didn't matter what price you bought for a house, someone else out there is going to buy it at a higher price. You see the problem? Yeah, exactly. Okay, how about sector analysis? These people will tell you that this is a hot sector. Right now, what is it? It's social networking is the hot sector. Titter and Facebook and Snap Crackle and whatever it is. Buy those stocks because they're the hot sectors. And sell the stocks in the stale ones. Oh, what's stale now? Oh, I guess China China. For a while there, anything with the name China went up. Or nanotechnology. But the problem with this is you usually buy just as the sector is about ready to roll over, as they say. It's had its run. It's had its day in the sunshine. And now the one that was stale that you sold is now going to have its day. And so I'm not a big fan of sector analysis, although people will tell you they can choose which sectors are the best sectors. And then the dumbest is market timing. Yeah, you buy as interest rates decline because that usually means the economy is ready to go up. And then you sell before the rates rise because that usually means when the rates rise, we're ready to have a sell-off because we're ready to have a recession because rates have gotten too high, interest rates have gotten too high, And you know, sometimes it works, most of the times it doesn't. You're trying to determine when you believe the stock market's going to fall. And interest rates and other indicators about when the economy is going to do badly have predicted 27 of the last 8 recessions. If that makes any sense. There are people, and I think they actually fool themselves into believing that they can do it. But there's a great saying from a very famous investor from the mid-20th century, Bernard Baruch, who said, "Don't try to time the market. It can only be done by liars." And I don't think he was trying to be nasty to these people, pejorative, so to speak. I think he was just saying these people lie to themselves. They lie to you, not because they're doing it on purpose. Maybe some of them are. But mostly they just believe in their own infallibility. And when it doesn't go right, they'll say, "Oh, it's because of this, but we got it right this time. Yeah, it's better than it was before." Anyway, the last one on slide 40 is actually a very smart way to invest, but it's also one of the most difficult. It's called contrarian investors. And contrarian investors are investors who buy when others are selling and sell when others are buying. Now, it's not easy to do. As we said in the previous chapter, when everybody runs one way, you want to run with them. And when everybody's running the other way, but when was the time to buy real estate? In 2005, 6, or 7? No, in 2009, 10, or 11, 12, if you could get the banks to talk to you, because they were just telling people, "Go away, we got too many foreclosures to deal with." And the same thing is true with stocks. The time to buy was after the Great Recession, 2009, 10, 11. We're going to see that when you take a look at the Ford example on the website. It's not up there yet, but it will be. Remember we looked at the Ford bonds? We're also going to look at the Ford stock and see that, oh my goodness, was that a great time to buy. Investors like Warren Buffett are contrarians. Mr. Buffett, for the most part, throughout the 2000s, sat on his hands and just said, you know, stocks are too expensive, I don't want them. He waited until 2008 when the market fell 40% and then rushed in and bought $5 billion of General Electric, $5 billion of Goldman Sachs, and I forget, was it $10 billion? I'm not sure how much, but he bought a ton of Bank of America. And he's looked like a genius. Of course, everybody else was selling, and he's very public about this. He put an opinion piece in the New York Times, of all places, saying, I am bullish, meaning I am excited, you know, I am optimistic about America. And he put his money where his mouth was, and he did very, very well. And there are people who always slam Mr. Buffett, always slam Warren Buffett. And I think, well, let me see how well you've done over the last 45 years, okay? And then we compare if you've done as well as he has. Yeah. Now, how do you sell the stocks? You will talk to investors who say, yeah, buying it was easy. Selling it was the worst, was the hardest part. I just didn't know when to sell. And slide 41, we take a look at some of these strategies. The first two of which are just really hard to do. You know, analysts will often set a target price for a stock using whatever numeric metrics that they believe in, whatever numbers they believe in, but that doesn't mean they're right, and you might set your own target price, but then does it make sense to sell just because it hit the target price? They say, well, if it goes down below it, you can always buy it back, but they were often asked, Mr. Peter Lynch, who was, we're going to talk about him in a couple of bullets right here, but they often ask Mr. Peter Lynch, who's one of the best money managers of all time also. In the next presentation, we'll talk about the all-stars of investing. What was your worst investment decision, Mr. Lynch? And he said, well, you know, my worst investment decision was I bought Home Depot when it was, you know, very new, a new stock, a new company, and I sold after it had gone up 100%. I doubled my money. And they looked at him and said, that was the worst investment decision you made? He said, yeah. It then went up 20 more times. So, that's a great story, isn't it? It's hard to know when to sell. That's why some people say, hold on to it. If it's a good company, hold on to it. Because the next one is sell when the stock is overvalued. Well, you have to decide what overvalued means. And Mr. Lynch thought it was overvalued and it had gone up two times. It had gone up once. It had doubled in value and then it went up 20 times. In his book, One Up on Wall Street, which is an excellent book, by the way, Peter Lynch describes his selling strategy. Sell when the story changes. If the reason or reasons that you bought the stock in the first place change, then consider selling. Doesn't mean you should sell, but you consider selling. And what he talks about in his book is his last thing he does before he makes a decision. He does all the research, he does all the numeric calculations and the like, things that we learn in Business 123 and what we learned in our last presentation. And then he puts it all in a three-ring binder for every stock that he owns. And then he holds the three-ring binder, or at least he did. He's retired now. He holds it up in his hand, and he says, this is FedEx. I am buying Federal Express because they are one of the two or three worldwide entities that deliver products overnight around the world, and it's made this much money, and internet commerce is only going to increase, or this is, you know, whatever company, and I'm selling it because this company has got new competition and their products are not as good as they used to be. You understand? After you've done all your work, just give yourself that 30, 60, 90 second story about why you're going to buy or why you're going to sell. I like that. I like that. And I often do that. After I've done all my work, I just sit there and go, I want to buy this company because, or I want to sell this company because. Sell when you have a better investment offer. Okay, that's not a bad idea, but you got to remember taxes and commissions. Exactly, exactly, yeah. And then the last one is the one I hope to use in retirement, assuming I live that long. When you need the money, it's time to sell. Yeah, right, I need the money. I need to live off of this money. And so that's we'll discuss that a little bit more when we get to mutual funds. Slide 42, asset allocation. Now, here is an age-old formula that's, in my humble opinion, and many others, I'm not the only one, not as important as it used to be. Asset allocation is a fancy term for how much should I have in stocks, how much should I have in bonds, should I have some real estate, maybe gold. Many advisors suggest for your financial investments, for your securities as they are called, a formula such as subtract your age from 100, subtract your age from 100, excuse me, or 110, or 120. What, the number's going up. Why? Hang on a minute. That's the percentage of stocks you should own. The rest should be in bonds and maybe some cash. So a 40-year-old person would have 100 minus 40 or 60% invested in stocks and the rest 40% in cash. A 60-year-old would have 40% in stocks and 60% in cash. A 20-year-old would have 80% in stocks and 20% in bonds or cash. And I think this is ridiculous. This is a formula that was good 50, 100 years ago, but not anymore. Why? Because people are living far longer than they used to be. And we're going to pick up on this theme a few times going forward. That's why they're raising the number to 110, 120. Yeah, somebody in their 20s, they should have no bonds. In my humble opinion, none. Especially now because bonds are extremely expensive. But that's my opinion. And others who say poppycock. How do you like that word, poppycock? We're not universal, folks. There are many others who still believe that everyone should have some bonds. But I believe that when you're in your 20s, 30s, and even into your 40s, depending on your risk tolerance, you should buy high-quality stocks because you'd have another 20, 40, 30 years until retirement. Once you start nearing retirement, okay, start buying bonds, but don't give up on stocks entirely. We'll go back to this in the next chapter when we take a look at mutual funds. Along with this technique on slide 43, some advisors suggest rebalancing. Rebalancing, what does that mean? Well, if you've set yourself a percentage, say 60-40, and stocks have had a great year, a banner year, well, now you might be 70% stocks, 30% bonds. You know, you're supposed to be 60-40. So every year, don't do maybe twice a year, but you don't have to do it every so often. You sell some stocks and you buy some bonds to bring the balance back to 60-40. Likewise, if stocks have fallen dramatically, if stocks have tanked, so to speak, you want to sell some bonds and buy some stocks to bring the percentage back up to 60-40. And why is this a good thing? Well, it forces you to do the right thing. It forces you to buy low, sell high. You understand? If stocks have done well, it's time to, as they say, take some money off the table and buy some bonds, because bonds probably did not do well. In fact, bonds might have gone down. Why? Because if interest rates are rising, bonds have gone down. But if interest rates are rising, that's usually a good sign for the economy, and stocks are doing well. But not always, you know, not always. Sometimes they raise the interest rates too high, and that kills the economy, and stocks will tank. And then as interest rates will fall, bonds will rise. You see, it's a dance. It's always going on. The dance is always going on. So if you're looking at some great gains on stocks, do you want to sell? No. It feels good to watch your account go high. But if you have this discipline, your discipline tells you, aha, it's time to sell, to be prudent, to sell some stocks and buy some bonds. Or you could put new money into the bond market, and that might bring you back up to the percentage. How would that work? It's an idea. Think about it. Slide number 44, in retirement. As we said, we're gonna talk about this theme in mutual funds, and then again when we get to retirement planning in chapter 14. Many advisors suggest that retirees shed the bulk of their stock investments in favor of bonds and cash investments. Well, this is old advice, folks. because it used to be that people, you know, 60 years old, they didn't have that much time to live. I mean, some people live very old, but not a whole lot, especially men. But that's not true anymore. People are living much, much longer. And the statistic that I read is that a 50-year-old today has a 50-50 chance of living to see 100 years old, which I think is great. My wife, my sister-in-law just go, just shoot me if I get there. I said, no, you will probably change your tune once you get there. You know, it's not so bad. They were spending much time in the nursing home caring for my mother-in-law, and they just said, if I ever get like that, I want you to just shoot me. Well, first of all, it's illegal. And secondly, you're going to change your mind. I think I'm looking forward to it. Hey, it's not so bad. Yeah. Anyway, we'll revisit this when we get to mutual funds, because inflation does not retire just because you do. As you near retirement, start migrating your investments from stocks to bonds, but do not abandon stocks entirely. And as I said, we have a very good example of this when we get to mutual funds. Okay? Okay, great. Slide 45. Now, there are other strategies out there, folks. Over the years, the financial world has come up with other strategies to help you exploit the wonderful world of finance. And coincidentally, they are also excellent sources of high commissions for stockbrokers. Surprise. Told you we didn't sell to everybody by the end of the semester. And these strategies include options, futures, margining, shorting. We saw these names back in Chapter 11, and I put a line through each of them. I should have a line through each of them in this chapter. Just stay away from these, folks. Stay far away from them, because you're almost virtually guaranteed to lose. But don't take my word for it, folks. Go to Optionetics or Online Trading Academy. I've got a link on the website that'll show you one of them. It's 10 three-hour sessions for only $5,000, folks. Only $5,000. 10 three-hour sessions, and we'll teach you how to trade options like a pro. You will have riches beyond your greatest belief. And when that doesn't work, we'll sell you the 2-week, $9,995 super exclusive training seminar, which is guaranteed to pay for itself in 2 months. Folks, don't worry about burning your credit card for that $10,000, because we guarantee that you'll make it back. And when that doesn't work, we'll let you mortgage your house, and we'll send you to Hawaii for $25,000 super exclusive. Only the most suckers, I mean the most intelligent and exclusive. You think I can make a lot of money if I didn't have any ethics? I think I could. These people are crooks. And the Securities and Exchange Commission goes after them because what they're doing is basically illegal. But you know, the Securities and Exchange Commission doesn't have a lot of teeth, so they send them a letter saying, stop doing that. And then they keep doing it, and then they send them a letter, stop doing it again. We told you to stop doing that. And then finally they get around to sending a court order, and then by that time the people have picked up and moved to another city and started another company. Oosh. So, they're out there, folks. Don't sugarcoat it. There are people out there who are willing to take your money. In fact, I went to one of them, and I listened to this guy talk, and he was brilliant. I mean, he was just a genius. He took lessons from W.C. Fields and P.T. Barnum and all the crooks in the past. And he said, now, I know some of you folks have something for $3,000 that you bought that's just sitting in your basement or your garage, and it's not making you any money, but this $3,000 today will make you more than that in 3 weeks, folks. Don't worry about burning your credit. Yeah, right. And he never gave anybody a chance to ask any questions. I was ready to ask all kinds of questions. He never allowed anybody to ask questions. Now, those of you who want to sign up, I want you to stand up right now and walk to the back of the room where people will sign you up. You see, he kept talking. He never allowed. He was a genius. And they're greed. They're just feeding off of people's greed. Okay, enough said. Let's go to slide number 46. Where do you get your information? Well, the media, dear students, is a sip from the fire hose, a deluge, a tsunami, a flood of information from TV, radio, newspapers, magazines, and of course the Infernal Net. Most of it is extremely sensational, short-term, and of highly questionable value for investment purposes. There's a great writer who you won't read his books. They're targeted toward brokers and life insurance salesmen and people who are representing the companies, financial representatives, registered representatives, which is the real name of a stockbroker. And he writes books geared toward those people. So you probably won't read his book, although they're good books. He has a saying, wisdom sold separately. I love that saying. Yeah, right. There's plenty of information out there from so-called experts, but the wisdom, that doesn't come with it. You know, it's not that, yeah, it's sold separately. My advice is to turn the damn things off. In fact, I think you should just get rid of your television. I really do. I've said it before. I say it again. People who are television free, according to the sociologists and the psychologists, are happier, they're less stressed, they live longer. Hard to believe. Anyway, how about a stock advisory service? Well, some of these are actually pretty good, and the best one is the one that's bolded. It's called, let's use the magic cursor, Value Line. You can get it for free. It's $600 if you buy it yourself, $50 a month. That's for the paper copy. I think it's less if you buy the internet base, but not much less. I think it's only $40 a month or $42 a month. But you get it for free at the library. Southwestern doesn't have it anymore. We canceled the subscription. But there are several libraries in the area, Chula Vista Main Library, San Diego Main Library, a few other San Diego County Library, City Libraries that have it for free. And if you really do enjoy what we've done so far and do enjoy some of the research that I ask you to do on the assignment, pick up the Value Line. Check it out. It's a wonderful service. And there are others. They're not the only ones out there. This is when we would take a look at Yahoo's finance site, and they really have done their best to destroy it. They really have, Yahoo. It's not quite destroyed yet. I feel sorry for the people who work there because it used to be a great website. There are others. There's MarketWatch, which is the Wall Street Journal, but it's the free one. The Wall Street Journal, you have to pay for their website, but MarketWatch is their version of the free version. There's Bloomberg's and CNBC's, and the one that's really not very good, which is interesting, is Google's, because usually everything Google does is, you know, very well done, but not their finance page. I don't know why. Maybe they're philosophically opposed to that. And then another great group to join is the National Association of Investors Corporation, the NAIC, and there's their website. They now refer to themselves as Better Investing, which I think is kind of silly. I like the National Association of Investors Corporation. But they're a great group. And they, we already made mention of them, they have the investment clubs. You join an investment club and you put in money, usually $25 a month or something like that, maybe 20, maybe a little bit more. But they're not dues. You are literally, maybe they take a buck out of that for dues. You are literally putting your money in to an investment, because the people work together to do research and make recommendations about what to buy and sell, and the money that you put into the club is a partnership, essentially, and you start investing with real money. And so it's a great way to learn, because it's real money, folks. And I joined one a while back, and I had a great time, and then it was time for us to end it, but I don't really have time to join another one. I wish I did when I retire, which I don't know when the hell that's going to be. Excuse my French. But check them out. And also, it's not there yet, but it will be. There's a there'll be a little presentation on how to use Yahoo to do research for your stocks. And maybe we'll include a couple others. Slide number 47. Another great information source, folks, is Business 123, Introduction to Investments. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah, available online already, always, and then face-to-face. It's taught by, well, actually, there's two people. I teach it, And then Henry Barry Gamboa, who's a retired stockbroker, bond analyst, and investment analyst. He teaches another section also, so check his class out, or check my class out, and it's a great place, because we've had people, students, who have taken this class, and then using their best dress suit, and their best resume without a single mistake, and gone out and got internships, and broker's assistants, or worked in the life insurance industry, or the banking industry, and it's a great way to get into the industry. Entry level, you know, they eventually want you to get, they want you to get your degree eventually, but it's a great way to get started. You don't need a degree to become a stockbroker, by the way. Books. I know you millennials don't like books, but the best book to read, no doubt, you get it for free at the library, is One Up on Wall Street by Peter Lynch. We already made mention of one of the things he talked about. He does a phenomenal job, and this was after he was a star. He wrote this after he was a star in the financial world. And people just said, they were ready to tear the book apart. They said, oh, he's going to talk about how wonderful he is. And nothing could be further from the truth. He didn't blow his own horn. He talked about why it's a good idea to own stocks. What are the pitfalls? What are the downsides? But he gave you some tools about how to search for stocks. And then he wrote another book called Beating the Street, which is basically the same book, but it goes into more detail about how he did his work. So both of them are good to read, although, you know, there's a lot of repetition. But that's okay. Repetition is great for learning. Another great book, which is a lot of fun to read, is A Random Walk Down Wall Street. Professor Burton Malkiel was one of the people who worked on the research for the efficient market theorist, the random walk theorist. And in his book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, he skewers the fundamental analyst, he skewers the technical analyst, and he skewers the efficient market theorist. He's like me, he likes to insult everybody. And he's got such a great sense of humor. So this is a great book to read, folks. Now, these are the two books you should either start with. Either One Up on Wall Street, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. If you read One Up on Wall Street, go ahead and read Beating the Street. After you've read one or both or all three of these books, then turn your attention to The Intelligent Investor. It is a difficult book to read. Make sure you get the newer edition, which has commentary by Jason Zweig. Because Mr. Graham is, he passed away in 1975, and he's brilliant. He was brilliant, and he's often called the father of value investing. Another name, he should be called the father of fundamental analysis. But he's just hard to read. And so you'll read his chapter, and then after each chapter, Mr. Zweig, who's a phenomenal writer in his own right, will tell you, this is what Benjamin means. This is what Benji was talking about, okay? Let's look at some real-life examples, and let's bring it down to, let's say it in plain English. And eventually every investor needs to read this book, because Mr. Graham was Warren Buffett's teacher. How's that for tying it all together, right? Warren Buffett wanted to get into the securities world, and he sought out the best instructor, and it turned out that Benjamin Graham was teaching, I think, at Columbia in New York, and he took his classes, and then he became a mentor and worked with Mr. Graham. And, yeah. And then eventually you want to take a look at security analysis. Now, this is a difficult book. This is don't pick that one up until you've done the others. And some of the techniques that they have in that class, in that book, we learn in Business 123. So how's that? Does that pique your interest? And finally, go to the company. Call up. If you're interested in Nike, call them up. Go to their website. There'll be a link called Investor Relations. Now, they want you to download these things because, you know, it saves paper, saves postage. But if you call them up, they'll send them to you. And you can get them online. The 10K, which is the annual report. And I ask the students in the face-to-face class, now, which one is that? And they say, 10K. And then I say, the quarterly report is which one? And they say, the 10Q. And I say, what's that? They say, 10Q. And I say, you're welcome. I see what you're missing in the online class? You could be dealing with all my really bad jokes. I had one student who just looked at me, little Latina, never said a word all semester long, just looked up at me and said, that's so wrong. Okay, now when we come back, dear students, we will finish our discussions of stocks by taking a look at some of the all-stars of investing. I often think if you want to do something well, look at the people who do it well and try to learn from them. And then we'll end with some famous myths and stupid things. Okay? And then at the very end, I'll tell you some of my worst investments. Okay? And they're not as good as Mr. Lynch's. See you in our next and final presentation for stocks.